Right there. Okay. Good morning and welcome to the Floor Time Foundation's web radio program, Infants, Children, and Families.
Thank you for joining us this morning. We have a very important topic today. We've been talking about the levels of thinking in helping children with attentional problems and overall their ability to regulate sensations coming into their bodies and plan their actions, and how improving the levels of thinking improves the child's ability to focus and attend and also self-regulate. And today we're going to talk about how to enhance the levels of thinking. It's particularly challenging sometimes when an older child, let's say a 7, 8, or 9, or 10-year-old, not old by ordinary standards, but older when we're working with 2- and 3-year-olds, or even 1 month, or 4- and 5-month-olds, it's particularly challenging to help a slightly older child, a grade school child, or even an adolescent, a junior high or high school child, or an adult, make up for some lost ground. Often we find that some of the foundations for thinking are compromised, are not, as we say, quote, cooking as well as they should be. So, for example, we may have a 7-year-old who's verbal and can interact and seems pretty typical when they're calm and relaxed and you can have nice conversations with them. But actually, on closer looking or closer evaluation, we find that this 7-year-old youngster is not as creative as we'd like to see him. So one of the important foundations of thinking, the creative and imaginative part of thinking, is a little more constricted or a little narrower in a sense than we want it to be. There's not as rich an imagination or as rich amount of creative juices stirring. Or we may find that the same youngster is not as strong on reading the emotional expressions of others. So pre-verbal back and forth interactions using facial expressions and gestures doesn't go on as long and doesn't get read and responded to as well as we would ideally like it to. There may be there a little bit, but not as much as we like it ideally to be. So that piece needs a little strengthening. Or we may find that the child is engaged and related, but not as deeply intimate with his caregivers, his mom or dad or a grandmother who may be living at home, or in peer relationships, so that the capacity for engagement with others may be, again, there, but not as strong as we would like it to be. Or we may find the child doesn't use all their senses together when they try to focus and attend. Their team doesn't play well as a whole team. Or if they were, again, to use the metaphor of a ballet, all the dancers are not in synchrony with one another. So they're not using vision and hearing and movement and smell and touch all in harmony with one another. So we may find that there are some missing components to the foundations for learning to pay attention and learning to be better and better at self-regulation, which are important components in the child's abilities to carry out the kinds of activities we expect of a 8 or 9 or 10-year-old, or even a 6 or 7-year-old, to be able to sit and focus and attend and take in information and think about it and plan what they're going to do next and then carry out organized strategies. This may be very, very difficult simply because some of these foundations are weak and shaky. So we may have a child, to use another example, who's moving into what we call multi-causal thinking, can give you many reasons for something, but can't do it when they're upset or when they're disappointed or when they're feeling overly excited about something. And then they, instead of giving you many reasons for something, just talk about what's on their mind. Never answer your why questions. Never get into causal thinking. So they have the capacity for the higher level of thinking, but not, it's not broad-based. It can cover a wide range of emotions. And that may be because one of these foundation steps that I've just been illustrating or describing briefly is not as strong as we want it to be. Therefore, in working with an older child or grade school child or junior high, high school, even adult, as we were talking earlier, we need to pay attention to all the developmental levels of thinking. We've now discovered the pathway to thinking, in other words, the steps that lead to more and more advanced thinking, which strengthen the self-regulating and attentional activities of children. And as we do this and carry this out, and as we help younger children master these steps when they're developing them for the first time, we also want to be mindful of how to help an older child go back and strengthen some of the steps that may have been only partially mastered. Children with special needs who also have attentional problems in addition may have major challenges in some of these early steps, like engagement or reading and responding to nonverbal emotional signals, or using words, or using words in an imaginative situation. Whereas children without special needs, but just with some attentional or learning challenges, may have minor difficulties in some of these areas. Therefore, next, we're going to elaborate a number of principles that will assist the parent or educator or other caregiver or mentor or really somebody trying to help a youngster with attentional problems or with self-regulation improve their thinking capacity and work at the early levels as well as the levels more appropriate to their age or the highest level they're capable of. So here are the principles we want to pay attention to. Number one, always work with the youngster at multiple levels at the same time, up to the highest level the child is capable of. So always harness that highest levels or that highest level. So let's say, again, it's a seven-year-old beginning to do some multi-causal thinking. Harness that level. Ask why questions and seek out multiple reasons for things. But at the same time, look at how well the child is, quote, cooking, end quote, at all the earlier levels and work with as many earlier levels at the same time as is possible. So let me give an example. Let's say your seven-year-old has come home from school and is looking a little discouraged, or says something about not wanting to do the homework right away, or talks about math being hard that day, or just simply says something like, I want to go out and play. What's useful to do at that point is to mobilize that multi-causal thinking, to strengthen that capacity, is to ask them why. Oh, gee, sounds like a good idea, but why? So if they want to go out and play, why? Oh, it's because I need some fresh air, or I've been sitting in school all day and I need to do something else, and the kids are outside, you know, playing, and I want to join them. Any other reasons? Oh, yeah, They're playing baseball, and that's my favorite game. All right, so already you've stirred. Well, that sounds pretty good. Already you've stirred some multi-causal thinking. The child gave you two reasons for something. But at the same time, while you're doing that, you're looking at your child, and you're listening to your child, and you're kind of very animated and moving in rhythm with your child, and you may be asking, well, where are you guys going to play? And your child is pointing outside to the lot at the corner of the block. And so your child is using their vision. They're looking at you. They're listening to you. They're pointing. They're using actions. You may say, well, where is that? You know, Mom, the lot at the corner of the block, you know, where we always play baseball. Oh, okay. And so the child is getting their whole orchestra working together, and they're focusing, even if it's a child who has great deal focusing. They're focusing because they're interested in the topic. You're picking up on their natural interest to go out and play baseball with their friends, and they're describing it to you, and they're using their whole orchestra or their whole mental team together to describe that. Also, because you're animated and joyful and there's a gleam in your eye and you're picking up on their interest, following their lead, you know, our floor time philosophy of always follow the child's natural interest when trying to promote higher levels of thinking, the child is very engaged. Also, you're very animated, so you're exchanging gestures and facial expressions. The child is gleaming in delight, and you're smiling, the child is smiling. And then let's say you raise a question. You're saying, but sweetheart, when will you have time for your homework if you do that now? And the child looks back at you and changes their expression to a little bit of a frown. Well, do I have to do that today? Well, you know, we got to do it sometime. Well, I guess when I get done. And you've exchanged some sort of more serious looks and head nods. And so now you're gesturing with each other and exchanging emotional expressions. And then let's say you want to get the creativity stirred along with logical thinking and causal thinking. So you say, oh, before you run out and play with your friends, you know, I haven't played baseball in a while. They haven't seen it. Is there... If you were in, just I'm just curious, if you were inventing a new style of baseball, would you do anything new or different? Well, Mom, no, and I got to go. Well, just one thing. Well, I was wondering if anything could make the game more interesting. Okay, well, I'll tell you one thing, and then I'm going to go. I got to go meet my friends. I would put the... where the person who pitches the ball to the batter, I put it back a little further, give people like me who aren't great hitters a little more time to swing and see the ball coming. Oh, it sounds like a great idea, sweetheart. Okay, well, go and have a good time, and I'll see you. Make sure you're back by 5, and I'll see you in a little bit. Okay, so now you've stirred the creative part of thinking. So in this brief example, we've seen how you, as a parent, or the parent in this example, has strengthened all the foundations while promoting multi-causal thinking, while helping the child be logical. And that's the first principle and the first goal. Work at as many levels as possible up to the highest level the child is capable of. The second principle is when working with a child at multiple levels, always start with doing it around the child's natural interests. Always follow the child's lead. In other words, here the child wanted to play baseball. So the conversation took place around that, and we saw this youngster able to focus and attend and use all their senses and their motor system around that, engage around that, interact with emotional signaling around that. So we'll have a much better chance at strengthening the child's capacities by starting where the child is around their interests, the floor time philosophy. Follow the child's lead, follow their interests. But we also saw in this example that you can then throw in other emotions. You don't have to stay only with the child's interests. So mom mentions homework, and we see the child be able to continue the conversation because it was related to his natural interest to play baseball, in spite of the fact that a source topic was being brought up, that homework will have to get done later and at some time during the day, and they got through it, and the child still stayed on subject, stayed on topic, and did it non-verbally with their gestures as well as later verbally. Now, whether or not they'll follow through and actually carry out the program and do the homework without a fight, it remains to be seen in this example. But nonetheless, we got the thinking levels going, which is our focus for now. So always follow the child's lead, follow the natural interest. Make that the starting point, but it doesn't have to be the concluding point. And it doesn't have to be filling all the middle part of the conversation. You can throw in different emotions by raising different questions and different issues, and you want to do that gradually. So that's the second principle. The third principle is that there'll be certain areas with children who have attentional problems or self-regulatory problems that almost always need particular emphasis in strengthening the foundations that are, you know, at the earlier levels of thinking with a school-age child or older. And these are the following. The ability to use all the senses and the motor system together in harmony, getting all the team players working together. So here we want to particularly focus on looking, listening, moving, and doing, touching, and sometimes smelling and even tasting, all working in harmony on solving a problem. We want to create situations where the child is doing that, like the mother saying, well, where is that lot again? Where are you going to play? So the child had to point and take action as well as use their vision and hearing simultaneously. So that's very, very, very important. Also, almost all the children with attentional problems are not able to have what we call a continuous flow of back and forth emotional signaling easily. You'll notice that often there are short bursts of back and forth exchange of facial expressions and gestures and other signs of emotional signaling, as well as verbal conversations. These occur more in short bursts than they do in terms of long 10, 15-minute dialogues. So here what we want to do is promote long interchanges. So that's why this mother so skillfully was very animated and then raised an issue that would lead to a frown and then raised, you know, back into optimism, well, we can do it later. And they had a longer conversation. It actually lasted 10 minutes or so than just one minute or 30-second brief interchange. Mom, I'm going out to play baseball. Okay. But you're going to have to do your homework as the child is walking out the door. So engage in long conversations for the verbal child and also long exchanges of gesturing, because the children have a hard time with their preverbal communication and gesturing. Also, in these long conversations, make sure that it's covering many, many different areas of emotional signaling. So you're not just gleeful and nodding and smiling, as this mother did. She raised some issues. She raised the question about homework. So we want to have a nice back and forth interchange with lots of gesturing and emotional expression and exchange of words, because this is always an area that needs strengthening. Long back and forth interactions and conversations, both non-verbally and verbally. That's a very, very, very important principle, because almost all the children are a little weaker in this capacity. And in just a second, we'll come back and elaborate some more principles. Sue, I'll be back with you in just a minute. Sue, can you hear okay? Okay, here we go. The next principle is to always, or as part of, well, let me backtrack a little bit. It's not a new principle. It's part of the areas where the children have special challenges. So it is a principle in a sense, is to increase the range of emotions that the child can mobilize and tolerate. This means the child can express these emotions and also deal with them as challenges when life brings them to the forefront in a flexible manner. So disappointment, frustration, anger, these are all emotions that are very, very difficult for children with attentional and or self-regulation difficulties. They often make children more active. They often make them more inattentive. You'll see topics being changed. You'll see some children becoming daydreamers and staring off at the tree outside the classroom because the teacher has raised a challenging math problem or a challenging reading assignment, or a mom or dad have asked the child to do something they really don't want to do, so they, quote, space out, as many children have described it to me. Some children with a big smile that their masters have, quote, spacing out and, quote, forgetting. Others get active and get even aggressive, or some have, quote, meltdowns, tantrums. This all is because they can't handle these more difficult emotions. For some, it's excitement and happiness and just too much of it. For some, it may just be too much noise or too much touching because they're sensitive to touch or sensitive to sound, or bright lights where they get overexcited and get overwhelmed because they're very sensitive to what they see visually. Others may be, complexity that overwhelms them, or a sense of an inner sense of fear of failure, or other fears and anxieties. So we want to increase the child's flexibility at many of the levels of thinking. The first is the one we've been talking about, long chains of interaction without even worrying about the words, just in terms of the child's ability to express through the facial expressions these different feelings, rather than through actions like hitting. Looking angry is better than hitting. Looking sad is better than doing something self-destructive or withdrawing. Looking frustrated and annoyed is better than just changing the topic. So we want to pay attention to a child's facial expressions and not be scared to show those expressions ourselves. So it's a back and forth interchange of facial expressions. You know, even with an empathetic comment, I know this may be frustrating or hard, or I know when I was little I could feel, how would you think I felt when I couldn't do a math problem? Well, I bet you felt sad or disappointed or frustrated. Well, how do you feel, Johnny or Susie? But the child's verbal expression is not as important as the child being able to experience the feeling. So we start off through gesturing with experiencing the feeling, and that's just part of the animated back and forth interaction. So the child is experiencing the feeling, and then, with the verbal child, describing the feeling. And we have to cover the whole gamut of feelings, from anger and disappointment and frustration and sadness and fear and anxiety to happiness, gleefulness, adventure, curiosity, etc. The full range of feelings. So we want to always enhance the child's flexibility. And we do this gradually. We don't have every discussion incorporating all the feelings, but there'll be natural opportunities where in a long conversation, a long back and forth interchange, this occurs. And where you, as a part of, as the adult or the mentor or the parent, where you will bring it up as part, again, of just a natural conversation. So with a child, again, who's about to go out and play baseball, well, homework does loom around the corner. What about the homework? That's going to bring up some frustration. Talking about school, after talking about the child's favorite song or the favorite music or the favorite TV show, we'll bring up moments of frustration. For the fairly verbal child, a very nice verbal game to play, which I call the Thinking About Tomorrow game, is where the adult and the child together, picture tomorrow or picture later today. Picture good things that will come up though, and how they'll feel, happy, excited, gleeful. How the other person involved in that, if there's another person involved in the happy thing that will happen tomorrow, will feel, what they routinely do, whether there are any alternatives they want to consider. And with the child is being the talker, you're being the Socratic teacher raising the question or the issue, but the child is talking two-thirds of the time. When the child needs a little help, you may give a little vignette from your own childhood. But then you get into the frustrating or difficult situations of tomorrow, things that will bring up the negative emotions. And again, you want to help the child become a poet of his or her feelings, all the feelings that can occur. That's the most important part of this whole discussion, verbally, but also with a lot of animation. And you can help the animation, the expression of it, so the child experiences it in their gut, in their body, the feeling tone, by being a very good, animated, empathetic partner, as your face mirrors the feeling of that they're having, they'll be more comfortable experiencing that feeling because they see that you can experience it with them. It's a partnership. So here we have the parent or the caregiver and the child experiencing this wide range of feelings at two levels. The level of verbal interchange, but also the level of the pre-verbal gesturing in an area that's very, very hard for the for children with attentional problems and self-regulating problems. So whatever level the child is capable of, we want to really work on this one. So the child, over a period of time, months, sometimes even years, becomes a flexible thinker across the full range of human feelings, from the experiencing side of it, the reading, the nonverbal interchanges that occur around this feeling, which keeps them from putting the feeling into action, to really problem solving with it in the thinking about tomorrow game. Because the last question in thinking about tomorrow game is, well, what other ways do we have of coping? Let's say the child tells you they're going to feel frustrated and angry, and they're going to therefore hit someone, or therefore they're going to just watch TV. Well, what other ways can we think of dealing with that? So that's very, very, very important to think of alternatives. So we want to enhance the child's flexibility. We want to enhance the child's capacity for experiencing the full range of emotions, both pre-verbally and verbally, because that's almost always difficult for children with attentional difficulties and difficulties in self-regulation. Another area that's challenging for most of the children is their range of creativity and imagination. Some of the children will do what I call escape into fantasy. The children who are not so active but tend to have attentional problems in a more passive way by just, quote, tuning out, will often, quote, escape into fantasy, which means they will want to do pretend play, or just in their own mind they'll start thinking of their own alternative story. They'll start daydreaming about being a great baseball player, or a great football player, or a great dancer, or a great actress, or a new gown they're going to buy, or a new game they're going to invent, or a new computer game to play. They drift off into another universe. But many of the children are not as strong on the what I call the shared use of constructive imagination and fantasy. So with an 8 or 9 year old, may not want to do pretend play on the floor like a 3 year old, where it's easy to stir fantasy and go from the simple soap opera to the grand epic by trying to go into the character's feelings and what's going to happen next and why it's going to happen that way, etc. And we can help the child in an age-appropriate way. We can challenge a child to invent a new game if they love computer games. Well, what would you invent? what would be a great computer game? What kind of computer character should we have? If the child loves sports, you know, what kind of twist change would they make for baseball or football? Or if they were coaching the local football team, what would they have the players do if it's a 9 or 10 or 11-year-old? So we can start creative thinking in all ways. And again, when we're doing creative thinking, in all the emotional areas, not just mastery and victory, but fear and people who are attacking other people, like in many of the computer games, how the characters feel, et cetera, et cetera. All kinds of dramas can be enacted, again, following a child's natural interest, but the adult should then throw in curveballs, throw in conflicts, throw in situations that will stir different feelings. A child has trouble with losing. Well, occasionally daddy will come up with a superpower that's even greater than Johnny's superpower. How does Johnny feel? Well, how does superhero feel that I have a bigger superpower? I don't like it. You know, it's little Johnny's character may say, I'm going to take girls away. So you can play out all kinds of scenarios. So creative thinking is also a foundation piece that can be strengthened. And when doing the creative thinking, always keep a logical dialogue going so it makes sense. It can be pretend and imaginative, going off to strange, new, distant lands that are created where people have magical powers, but these should be based on a logical sequence. In other words, the magical power works because of A, B, C, or D. So the child is not just going from one topic to another topic in a disjointed way. Also, another area where children with attentional problems have is a tendency to think in fragmented pieces rather than connecting all the dots. So we described this earlier when we talked about sequencing abilities, but it's a part of being a causal thinker, part of being a logical thinker, where the child can answer, you know, why they want to go play baseball because it's fun, or give you multi-causal reasons for something because it's fun and because my best friend is there and because it's a nice day outside, etc. But we also want to help the child go beyond that. We want to help the child always connect the dots together, particularly when they get fragmented or change subjects. When you bring up homework, for example, they may just start talking about their favorite TV show. So here, to help them connect the dots together, don't just bring them back to the subject. Say, oh, wait, come on, let's finish talking about the homework. Say, wait, I'm confused. I thought you were telling me about homework, and now you're telling me about this new computer game. What? I'm confused. So the child now has to connect the dots. Well, Mom, the homework made me think about the computer game because the homework is about math and the computer game is about how many points you can get, which you have to count, and that's about math too. Now, the child has just come up with a creative connection between his math and the computer game, which is very good. So they're learning to connect dots together, even if it wasn't the original reason why the child changed subjects. But it's putting the burden on the child, or the challenge on the child, to connect their thought patterns together. And in this way, a child becomes stronger at becoming a big picture thinker, at seeing the whole forest, not just getting lost in the trees, or not using tree thinking, you know, for avoidance or to deal with frustration. So always help the child connect the dots together. Now, another area, and really this is another principle in its own right, where the way we should think about these on reflection is that the areas that are tough for almost all children with attentional problems and self-regulatory problems, each of these foci, I'm emphasizing, should be a separate principle in its own right in the way we describe these. So another principle, another component that's hard for children is what we call gray area thinking. and we'll come to that in just a second.
Okay, Sue, can you hear? Okay.
Okay, another principle, an area where children with attentional problems have a real challenge, is what we call gray area thinking. Remember, that's where the child can not only give you many reasons for something, but if they're comparing A versus B, why they like Johnny better than Harold to play with, they can tell you the degree to which they like Harold better than Johnny. So they like Harold better because he's a better baseball player, and he's a better friend and loyal and doesn't run to the other group when the other group is teasing me. Well, and he's a much, much better friend than Johnny. If I gave Johnny 2 points as a friend, I'd give him 8 points as a friend. Sometimes he's not able to play when I want to play. That's why he doesn't get 10 points on the friendship scale. So they can tell you the degrees of things. If they're angry, they can tell you, well, gee, I'm just a little bit angry today, or I'm very, very angry, or I'm really fuming and ready to explode. And gray area thinking is hard for children with attentional difficulties and self-regulating difficulties because they tend to operate as all-or-nothing thinkers. The world is all good or all bad, or today was a great day, or today was a terrible day, not in shades of gray. Well, today was okay. Today was a little better than yesterday because of blah, 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 blah. Or today was a little worse than yesterday. Tomorrow should be a really super day, even better than today, because we get to go on a trip to the museum or the zoo or to actually see the new baseball field being built for the professional team, et cetera, et cetera. So the gray area thing can tell you degrees of things. And not surprisingly, this builds on that capacity for lots of back and forth emotional signaling, lots of animated conversations which have a strong nonverbal facial expression, emotional communicative component, with lots of gesturing back and forth and long conversations, because these help a child be regulated. Remember, to be a gray area thinker, you have to feel emotions in the small degrees. You can't go from 0 to 60 miles an hour all at once. And that gets learned for the first time really between 1 and 2 years of age. But for older children who haven't learned it, you can learn it at any age. So if mom or dad or your teacher is very empathetic and helping you express and experience different emotions in different degrees, a little frustration, a little more frustration, a little more frustration, a little happiness, a little more happiness, and a little bit more and more and more, and anger and sadness in degrees through the way you experience it in your body through this back and forth rhythm of emotional expressive interchange. And here the only thing I need to mention in terms of practical advice is just be very animated yourself and make sure you're not a 0 to 90 mile an hour person when you interact with your son, going from calm to explosive rage and tantrums or anger yourself. Be very graduated in your responses and for all the different emotions, whether it's happiness or sadness or annoyance. And your son or your daughter will eventually learn to do this as well. So this is the forerunner of them being able to do this verbally, describe shades of gray. But you can't do it unless you experience the world that way. So you're in a gray area experiencer as well as a gray area thinker. So a gray area thinker, remember, can tell you the degrees to which they're angry or sad. So in the thinking about tomorrow game, which we described a little bit earlier, we not only want to become a poet of our feelings or help the child in anticipating feelings before they're overwhelming, but to tell you the degrees of the feelings. All babies start off with catastrophic emotions, all or nothing emotions. And we want to help them become more graduated, which again can normally happen between the first and second year of life, but can happen at any time. Even adults have to work on this. And we all have our buttons, and children are no different than adults. So there's certain emotions that will be tougher for all of us, where we become all-or-nothing thinkers. We go back to those catastrophic emotions of infancy, which leads to the more polarized all-or-nothing thinking. And some may argue that there are certain absolutes in life that are all-or-nothing, like that you don't hurt other people. And I wouldn't argue with that. And many religions and cultures have all-or-nothing principles. But I'm not talking about that here. Here I'm talking about the areas which benefit from gray area thinking, where we don't have to have an all-or-nothing attitude. And it's the ability to make that distinction that we're talking about. And lastly, the principle that's probably the hardest for all of us, and especially children. And we can't expect this until a child is 10 or a little older, is reflective thinking. It's especially hard for the child with attentional and self-regulating problems. Just as we shouldn't expect gray area thinking until a child is 7 or 8 to be fully developed, although we may see forerunners of it even in a 5 or 6 year old, or even 4 year old sometimes, we can't expect reflective thinking fully developed until a child is above 10, and it continues throughout life, getting more and more complex. This is where the child can remember, as we described it earlier, say things like, gee, I'm angrier than I should be in this situation. Or little Sally can say, gee, I don't know why I'm so sad today. Usually I'm feeling more positive, but I woke up feeling kind of down. I wonder what it is. This is where they can use this skill academically to compare two authors and whose background is more similar to their own, and that's the reason why they like this author better than the other author, and prove their point. This is where they can evaluate their own work. Gee, I did a pretty good job today, or not as good as I usually do, or I was a little tired in writing this essay, and it's not as coherent, where they can evaluate their own work. This ability to think about your own thoughts, to evaluate yourself, allows you to plan master strategies to help you stay on task, to help you focus and attend. If you're a procrastinator, you could say, gee, I tend to be a procrastinator. I tend to delay things. What can I do to motivate myself to get it done early? What kind of rewards can I promise myself so I'll get this task finished and completed? So this is not easy. And caregivers and parents can promote this by, one, promoting all the levels of thinking that lead up to it. This builds on gray area thinking and multi-causal thinking and logical thinking and being creative and being able to have a continuous flow of back and forth interactions with a lot of emotional signaling and being very engaged and using your whole mental team together as one solid orchestra or one solid ballet or one solid great basketball team. So it builds on all the others. So we have to make sure all the pieces are in place. But then we can promote it by always asking the child's opinions and helping the child be an evaluator. Well, what'd you think of what mom and dad did? Gee, what do you think of the essay? No, don't just say, well, this is good or this is bad or I like this or change this or this is where you went wrong on the math problem. But what do you think, sweetheart? Well, I don't know, mom. I don't even know where to look. Well, look at the first paragraph. What would you say your main point is? And what's your very next paragraph talking about? Well, I did kind of stray. I didn't stay on my main point. Well, how come? Well, I guess I wasn't thinking. Well, how can we help you, or how can you help kind of keep to your main point? Well, I could just make myself do it. Or I could list all the points that I want to support my main point and then use that as a reminder. Well, that's a great idea. We could put your main point in should we do it in a box or a circle? How do you want to do it? And then the child can design a little arrows and a little visual design with their main points in a circle or a box and then sub points under them, starting with the most important ones and going to the least important ones, then having another box for the conclusion, and then keep checking as they do each paragraph against their diagram. They can, with your challenges, create their timetable for when they're going to do the homework assignments, and then they can check themselves off from where they are, and then instead of saying, come on, you got to do your homework, saying, hey buddy, what have we not done so far today? I don't know, Mom. I think I've done everything. Well, what do we? How can we check ourselves? Well, we can look at the little diagram in my room that we designed that we listed earlier. So you go back into the room, look at this big visual design on the door on the bulletin board, and what have you checked off and what have you not checked off? And little Johnny or little Susie can kind of evaluate themselves, how they're doing, how they're cooking in terms of their game plan for the day. Well, I think we're going to have to put this one off to the weekend to change it. But I'll have time then. Okay, if you want to change boxes, change it to the weekend assignment sheet, so be it. The child has made a strategic decision. They really do have time on the weekend. They can do it. But this is what a good self-evaluative thinker does. It allows them to stay on topic. And reflective thinking is enhanced by really, I guess, the last principle we'll talk about, which comes back to one of the early principles, using all the senses and the motor system, the whole mental team together. But now we're using it together to enhance reflective thinking. So we have the diagram because it's visual support. We talk about it. That's verbal. We write things in the diagram. That's verbal written. We take actions consistent with what we've planned. And we may even do something very sophisticated with our reflective thinking, with our diagram and our discussion. Put next to each of the tasks that we're planning to do, where if we have attentional problems or we have difficulties with self-regulation, it may be admittedly hard, how much we want to do it, what emotions are attached to it, frustration, feeling like a failure is I don't do this well, wanting to avoid, I'm going to look for escape routes, to glee and happiness, and I'm going to be successful. I know I'm going to get an A. What are the expected challenges? What are the expected positive emotions and negative emotions? What's my motivation? How much do I want to do this? And if we list that and write that out next to each task, we'll be helping the child, and the child will do this, figure out why certain things they're going to avoid, certain things they're going to embrace, and they do it before they actually are confronting a situation where the emotions get so strong they just lapse into the pattern. Most of us, for example, who are forgetters and avoiders or procrastinators, kind of lapse into it when we're confronted with a strong emotion of a fear of failure or a fear of success of the moment. But if we do it before we're confronted with that, the day before, we have an easier time of it. And helping the child do that, becoming an evaluator of their own feelings and use their whole mental team in doing it, helps them focus and attend much more effectively. Now, again, every time we're helping the child with reflective thinking or gray area thinking or their creativity, we're always using vision and hearing and movement and a lot of facial animation. We're always very engaged with the child. We're always following the child's natural interests as a starting point and then getting into more difficult terrain. We're being as creative as possible as part of the agenda. And we're always helping the child make sense when they don't connect the dots, when they get off topic. Well, wait, I got lost here. So we're always building the foundations as we get into the higher levels of thinking, multicausal thinking, gray area thinking, and finally, and importantly, reflective thinking, which then becomes, and reflective thinking becomes enhanced with more experiences. We broaden it to all new areas as we learn new things, as we experience life in more complex ways through adolescence and adulthood. Well, we're going to conclude on that note. And these are some ways to enhance thinking that will enhance self-regulation and attention. And this complements what we've talked about a little bit earlier in terms of how the different levels of thinking can help contribute to better and better attentional capacities. Well, thank you for joining us today. And next time we'll have another interesting topic for discussion.